The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Buddy Bill Buckmaster back with Ray Allen. Good to see Ray on the other side of the glass. Ray had a terrific time visiting New York City and Boston, and so it's good to have Ray back. Had a terrific vacation. Ray engineering and producing our show, and together we welcome you to the Buckmaster program on this Monday, the 25th of June, 2018. We're coming to you from AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. Hope you had a great weekend. Our Monday political face-off kicks off the week and has done so, really, every Monday since we began our radio program in January of 2011. Our team of commentators this week, Bruce Ash, fourth-term Republican National Committeeman for Arizona, Dr. Don Jorgensen, is here as well. Don's the former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Bruce and Don, how was your weekends? Weekend? Why did I say plural? Weekends. How did the weekend go?
It's been a few weeks.
Yeah.
Real nice. My wife had celebrated a birthday over this weekend, so we basically spent the entire weekend celebrating her birthday. So had a great time.
One of those ice cream birthday cakes?
Oh, no, not that, but all kinds. About three different types, from the little bundt cakes to everything, but a lot of nice dinners with friends. And
we had a great time. Bruce, how was your weekend?
Well, not to compete with Don and birthday things. The sixth anniversary of my dad's passing was actually yesterday, and my dad loved deli food. And for some of you listening, you might have heard of a place on the Lower East Side of New York City called Katz's Delicatessen. Well, my dad's picture is in the window at Katz's, and he used to go there whenever he's in New York City, and he would buy stuff and have it shipped out. So we had the sixth annual Paul Ash Memorial Knockwurst and Knebelwurst eat-off yesterday. Yeah. We had Knockwurst, we had Knebelwurst, we had these great half-sour pickles and pickled tomatoes. Wow. And we had all kinds of goodies from Katz's Delicatessen. We even got their sauerkraut, got their bread, and we got corned beef, and we got pastrami, and it was delightful. And I could feel my dad's presence there, just with his mouth, you know, watering, knowing that we were eating all this good Katz's deli food.
He was this big weightlifter, your father. I couldn't believe the picture. I mean, it was a great picture that you posted of your father. Like, he was like this weightlifting champion.
Oh, he was. And actually, the picture that you might be referring to was when he won one of his two national championships, and he had broken an American record for the standing press. It was, I think, 1956 in El Paso, Texas. And so my dad had been sort of he had the moniker of being the strongest Jew in the world. There was a guy and that really wasn't the case, because the Russian weightlifters, who many of them were Jewish, were far stronger than my dad. But there was a sports editor at the Arizona Daily Star in the 50s and 60s, Abe Channon. And Abe loved my dad and helped him defray costs. He helped raise money to help my dad go to Israel for two international championships. And so in 1957, when my dad won his first World Maccabiah title, Abe named him the strongest Jew in the world, and it kind of stuck with him for the rest of his life.
Wow.
Anyway. Well, to bring that around, you need to be a weightlifter to lift those sandwiches and hats, too. So that makes perfect sense.
That's true.
Our Monday political face-off presented by our friends at Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. I've, of course, got always a job in the works for Moe, and so everything that Moe does, as Bruce Ash knows, comes back beautifully. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. They're quite a team over there, because you got Corinne, Moe's daughter, who is just so knowledgeable, Bruce.
Yeah, and actually a friend of mine bought a Howard Post watercolor from the U of A Museum, actually through the School of Business, I think, for the foundation, and he took it to Moe's to frame it. And, you know, it was sort of a plain-looking thing. You know how watercolors are. Yeah. And anyway, Moe absolutely lit this thing up. It looks so great. In fact, on my way to the office after being here today, I'm stopping by his office. I can't say who it is.
Okay.
In order to see it for the first time in person.
Very
just
cool.
Gorgeous.
Don, getting to politics, Bruce.
Oh,
had,
do we have to talk about politics?
I know.
We're having such a good time.
It's going
time.
So well.
Yeah. Bruce had
it's
posted.
It's all downhill from here.
Bruce had posted that one of the strongest things going for Republicans. Bruce posted on Facebook today was the economy, but I wonder about that with this trade war.
Well,
and look at the market today.
Yeah, the market's up and down. It's going to continue to go up and down. What's more of greater concern is how U.S. companies are reacting to it. You look at the changes now happening at Harley-Davidson, one of the strongest U.S. Kind of branded companies in the world, and they're now being hurt directly by the trade tariffs. They're now looking at moving jobs overseas as a result of it. You have the plant, one of the European car companies opened up a plant down in the Carolinas, and now they're talking about cutting way back on staffing that.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at farmers and all kinds of other business owners around the Midwest now talking about actively being hurt by the trade wars. And so that is going to have a much longer term negative effect on the economy than just what we're seeing with the stock market.
But Bruce, you believe the economy is doing very well and people are responding.
Well, the economy is doing well, and the majority of Americans believe that the president's program is a winning program and has already brought dividends to them. I will say this about the tariffs, Don and Bill. These are negotiations, and these are tough negotiations because we have a lot of catching up to do. I think everybody expects, whether it's us or the folks who we are having these talks with, that we're going to meet somewhere in the middle. We really shouldn't have to sustain the current status quo forever, particularly when we agreed to these tariff agreements at a time when these other countries and these other companies weren't as strong as they are today. And I think we have to be patient with this and not get caught up in the day-to-day gyrations in the stock market or the back and forth between our government or other governments around the world. And you know, Don, I think you'd have to agree. Companies do what's in their best interest. Before this business ever came around, General Motors had already decided to build a large plant for production in Mexico. You know, there are things that we do as a company, you know, either my little company here in Tucson or a worldwide company such as GM to help their company's specific best interest. And I'm confident that guys like Wilbur Ross, who is a genius at Secretary of Commerce, as well as Robert Lighthizer, who's the U.S. Trade Representative, along with other officials in the administration, are using this leverage that they're trying to get to the best advantage of all of our companies and our citizens.
Yes, there's always ongoing negotiation. You're right about that. And it's fine with wanting to bring certain trade deals up to date because circumstances and time change. But the difference here is this president started by blowing up existing agreements and creating unnecessary trade wars as the start of a negotiation. And as you point out correctly, that takes months and months. It may take years. Well, during this period of time, American companies are being hurt unnecessarily as we see these tariffs being applied by other countries. And they're targeted tariffs, as you see, too, because they understand the political situation in the U.S. But in the meantime, we're going to see a negative impact on jobs. We're seeing a negative impact on...
Well, we sure haven't seen a negative impact on jobs so far.
Not so far. We're talking about, as you point out, what's happening, starting to happen, and what we may see in the next year or two compared to where we could be.
Well, it's kind of difficult to get below 3.6% national unemployment. You know, what I always focus on, actually, Don, and to your point, with some amount of agreement, what we really have to do is get the non-participating labor force numbers down as far as we can go. It's great that we have this low unemployment. We need to get more of our people who left job seeking back into the economy. And they certainly have come forth in the last year or so. We need more and more of those men and women, particularly recent college age, you know, college graduates who weren't able to find a job, get them into the job market.
And it would be great then to see the administration focus on providing incentives for that rather than on just incentives for reinvestment of profits into shares instead of increasing job availability.
And I agree with you. And certainly there needs to be kind of a holistic approach, as there ought to be on a lot of different issues. And that's certainly a good idea.
All right. Mona's Danish Bakery is waiting for you right now, Don and Bruce. I don't know if either of you will be up in the vicinity of Swan and Sunrise, the northeast corner up there, but it's a great place to grab a sandwich. And the bread that sandwich will be served on came out of the oven just a few hours ago. Steve gets up so early, the owner. He and his team of bakers. Check out. Do you like bakery goods, Don?
Oh, I love it. We said this last time. I'm Danish. You're talking about a Danish bakery.
Because he's the home of the Danish Kringle.
It's incredible. But I have to point out, here we are at noontime sitting in a studio, and all we're talking about is food.
Go to buckmastershow.com. It's my website. We have a great list of partners there, including Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Tuesday for a mid-year economic update from UAE economic forecaster Dr. George Hammond, plus Republican CD2 congressional hopeful Leah Marquez Peterson. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice. Welcome back. It is the Monday Face-Off presented by Moe's Gowrie and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985, specializing in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, and hanging services. Moe's Gowrie and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgowrie.com and on Facebook. Don Jorgensen is seated to the left of me, Bruce Ash to the right. Bruce, what's going to happen with immigration? The president says let's don't even worry about it till after the midterms. Do you disagree?
Well, I think this is more of Trump, anti or kind of counterintuitive. But unfortunately, I don't think Congress is going to do anything. And there's lots and lots of work that Congress has to do. And look, I send this message out to Republicans and Democrats, and frankly, to the president and his administration. We need to get serious about immigration, here in this country. There needs to be greater border security. There has to be an answer with respect to how we are adjudicating these cases. We don't have nearly the number of immigration judges that are required. We don't have nearly the amount of staff at U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services to even process the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of these applications that are made every year, and the new ones for people who are here in this country who have applied for citizenship status. And probably the biggest thing, and we don't hear much about this, we have practically no interior immigration enforcement in this country. If you or I, Don, were to go, to name a country, almost any country in the world today, we would give them all of our information, we would have a visa in many cases, and if we overstayed that visa, there'd be somebody who'd be looking for us. That simply doesn't exist. Now, there's lots and lots of emphasis on the border, but as you've pointed out and others have pointed out on this show for a long, long time, most of the people who are here illegally came in an airplane or in a ship. Hmm. They came here legally, and now they're here staying illegally. And we need to do more and more. And Congress just and the president as well. We're demagoguing this. We are sensationalizing this. This business that happened last week with the child separation. This is something that's been going on since George W. Bush through the Obama administration. This is not what we should be doing. We shouldn't be focused on this. We need to get real answers to solve the problems.
Well, you are sounding reasonable, and there was a lot of agreement right till the end. This separation of families hasn't been going on. This is a deliberate Trump policy, a manufactured
crisis. The zero tolerance portion.
Yeah, the zero tolerance, which resulted in the separation mm-hmm. of children from families, putting children in cages. Before I come back to what Bruce said, and there is some agreement there, I think we have to recognize that this action by President Trump and no one else, he's responsible for this policy, putting children in cages, I think is going to go down in history as one of the worst kind of humanitarian stains in the U.S., like the Japanese internment camps. That's what this is, and it was completely unnecessary. The president made false statements day after day about who was responsible and not, and finally had to admit by signing the executive order that he alone was responsible for that. Yes, we have to take care of this first. This is a crisis. After that, yes, there has to be reasonable immigration reform, which is what the Democrats in Congress have been pushing for years. And if you think back in history, all the way back to 2017, mm-hmm. You had Republicans and Democrats in the Oval Office with President Trump with a comprehensive immigration reform plan that included many of the things that Bruce just described, a great comprehensive plan, addressed border security, addressed the issues of internal immigration, changing the visa numbers and all of that. The president agreed to it and then turned around the next day and said no. The same thing is happening now, where the president several days ago said we must have an immigration legislation. McSally's hard line, kind of extreme one, failed. There was still talk about creating a more reasonable plan, and the president again flip-flopped from saying yes, we need it, to let's wait till after November. So the desire is there. The effort is there. The willingness to compromise is there from the Democrats. I believe it's even there for many of the Republicans in Congress. But the president is flat refusing to do the right thing and keeping it simply as a campaign issue, a political strategy to keep his extreme base riled up.
All right, so let's talk about facts. Don says that the Obama administration wasn't doing this. Leon Fresco, a deputy assistant attorney general under Obama, who defended the administration's use of family detention in court, acknowledged that some fathers were separated from children. ICE could not devise a safe way where men and children could be in detention together in one facility. It was deemed too much of a security risk. Now look, this is what happens.
Based on security, not as a policy to separate all children from parents.
From a practical standpoint, zero tolerance was meant to serve as a deterrent. Can you imagine, Don? Would you ever in your wildest dreams conceive of you and your wife and a baby coming across the border in the middle of the desert? Okay. Now those people who show up together with parents at border crossings, those people are kept together. These others are absolute illegal, and anybody would be separated from their parents. No reasonable parent would be taking their children.
Well, let's
into
let
that
Don
kind of
answer
way.
That. If conditions were bad enough where you were coming from, would you consider it?
Well. I think there's all kinds of different examples of that. Yes, you have families coming across, sneaking across the border for economic reasons or whatever reasons. You also have the folks who are coming over, attempting to do the right thing, lining up, coming over, seeking asylum.
And those people are not separated.
They
from
are
the
separated.
No,
we
not,
have
Don.
Evidence of
Don,
that today.
They are not, and that's
you
just simply not true.
You can continue to say that, and Republicans continue to say that, but there is evidence. There have been parents interviewed who came for that reason, and they've
really
been
like
separated.
Like the little Honduran
and
girl?
And they're still looking
was, that
for
that was a poster child on Time magazine?
Children. That's the case today. So you can't say that's not happening. It's happening. There's evidence. There's proof. In fact, the Democratic legislators had to go down to the border stations, to these detention facilities, and basically demand to get in to see this, to be able to prove it, because the Trump administration was barring any legislators, anyone from going in. They were providing no transparency. It was all done under secrecy. And
be a big issue at the polls?
Oh, absolutely. It's
for
a
Democrats
big issue.
In the midterm.
Certainly it is, because, again, it demonstrates the callousness of the Trump administration, the absolute willingness to separate children from parents.
There's
to separate
2,300
families.
Children.
And now let's get to the next issue you mentioned about the absolute need for judges. Democrats agree. It's your President Trump who disagrees, who said yesterday and has said again this morning he sees no need to bring 5,000 judges down and wants to just ignore due process and wants to violate his oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution.
Go ahead, Bruce.
There will be judges. There need to be judges. And there also has to be a revision in the law that now takes into account this callous sort of work that's being done by coyotes and by some people in South America to further exacerbate the situation here in this country. And that is, up until about 3 or 4 years ago, about 90% of all of the illegal crossers were simply men. Now, that's an entirely different kind of a situation than what we currently have, where families are coming across. And the laws really don't adequately address the distinction in how the immigration tendencies have changed over the last several years. And look, just like the trade business, Don, there's a lot of things said during the middle of a negotiation. This president has expressed a desire to swiftly adjudicate these cases, and in most cases they are. We just need more of these judges to come along and take these responsibilities on.
Unfortunately, that sounds good, but the president has demonstrated through his words that his words have no credibility. And anything he says like that cannot be believed, because we know we'll hear something different tomorrow. You can only judge the administration by their actions. Well, and their actions have shown very clearly that they have no interest in developing any policies or any legislation at this time to either to deal with this crisis or to deal with the types of reforms that you are describing and proposing.
Well, let's also look at something that Jay Johnson, the former Secretary of Homeland Security, said. He admitted that that under the Obama administration, they expanded the detention centers under his watch. And in an interview with NBC's Andrea Mitchell, he said, so in 2014, to deal with the spike, then with families, we did a number of things, including, by the way, working with the Mexican government and obtaining their cooperation and securing the southern border. We also expanded family detention, which was, I freely admit, controversial.
Thank you for bringing that up, because we had the opportunity to view that interview the other day. They replayed it. Mm-hmm. And again, what you're describing are two different things. Family detention centers. Yes, they did that. They didn't separate the families. They didn't separate the children from the parents, except in extreme circumstances, and it was not their policy to do so. What they also did, however, was create what were called family case management assistant programs, where those families could continue to be tracked and assisted, particularly those seeking asylum, without indefinite detention. That system was working. Over 95% to 98% of those families came back for their hearings with regard to asylum. They didn't disappear into the wind. The Trump administration canceled that program.
Well, the Democrats want to demagogue this by comparing these to Nazi concentration camps. And the simple facts are about 2,300 children have been separated from their parents since last Thursday.
What number is acceptable?
Since last Thursday, about 20% of them have been returned to their families, who are incarcerated in many cases, and the rest will be reunited within the next week or 10 days.
If the Trump folks can find them.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook has presented our Monday political face-off with Bruce Ash and Don Jorgensen. Don, thank you very much.
A pleasure.
And Bruce, thank you.
Sure.
All right, we will be right back right after this. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport, and when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights, and with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
With spring in the air, summer will be here before you know it. At Bon Voyage Travel, we want to help you stay cool through the hot summer months, and there's no better way than a Holland America cruise to Alaska. There are hundreds of dates and itineraries to create your perfect Alaska vacation. Why not add a Rocky Mountaineer train journey while you're there to explore all of North America? Call Bon Voyage Travel today at 797-1110 or visit bvtravel.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and this portion presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. The big selling point over there this time of year certainly is one of the big selling points. It's cooler, 10 to 15 degrees cooler in an area with so much to do, hiking, camping, exploring historic Silver City, or just relaxing in a lovely environment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and visit in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. David Safir writes at the TucsonWeekly.com under their column they call The Range, and they call it that because everything from A to Z is covered. And David primarily covers education and writes about education. There's certainly been no shortage of educational topics this year. David, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Bill. Thanks.
So much going on in the way of education. In fact, I would say this is the first gubernatorial race that I can remember in many years where the centerpiece was education, is education.
I'm going to say that for the state, not for the nation, but for the state, this is the education election. And one thing I've noted, and we've talked about this on the show before, is that over the last couple years, whenever they do surveys of Arizonans, they're saying, we're for education, we're for public education, we're for more money for education, and even saying we're willing to be taxed on it. Now, Doug Ducey, who, you know, is right now the governor, he talks about almost nothing else. I heard him, Bill. He was on an interview on Fox TV. I happened to find that on an email. And there he talked about the wonderful things he's been doing about funding education. He talked about the wonderful things he tried to do to make our schools safer so we didn't have a shooting. In other words, on Fox News, of all places, he was touting his education agenda. And one thing I haven't heard teacher bashing. I haven't heard about failing schools. I haven't heard about schools wasting money. And these are our Republican talking points. So I think that they're feeling the shift in the winds, and I'm very happy about it. And I think what Doug Ducey is doing right now is saying to people, listen, you don't have to vote for the Democrats to get more money. I'm almost as good as a Democrat on education, which is a very, very strange thing for a Republican to be saying.
Well, realistically, he did himself a lot of good with this Red for Ed thing and the money coming to teachers. I mean, he's going to certainly and is using that in the campaign.
Well, he and his advisors are nothing if not savvy. And they saw this brewing and they thought there was only one way to deal with it, and that's to change. Remember, before this, he said 0.5% to 1% increase. That's what he's talking about. And then all of a sudden, miraculously, he reached in the sofa cushions in his office or something like that and found enough money for a 9% raise. Yeah. I don't know why it wasn't there before. So they know the writing is on the wall. And I'll tell you another indication of that. The State Board of Education, everybody on there but the Superintendent of Public Instruction is appointed by Ducey. They're all his appointees. Well, they were going to bring up an issue saying, I wonder if we should punish the Red for Ed teachers who walked out of the schools because, after all, they violated their contracts maybe, and should we give them a warning? Should we punish them? And they decided to table the issue, and Doug Ducey said, no, I don't think we should punish them. So really, in every sense, he is saying, I love the teachers. And that's what he's been saying. The teachers deserve a raise. The schools are doing a great job. He hasn't been pushing charters. He's been avoiding the subject of vouchers like the plague, which will, of course, be on the ballot, and also the question of invest in education, which will be a tax on the wealthiest Arizonans if it passes, to give more money for education. He's avoiding that by saying, listen, look at all the wonderful things I'm doing here for education. So it's really an interesting situation.
So invest in ed or invest in education. That, do you think that is going to make the ballot?
I don't have any crystal ball on that.
July 1st will be the deadline for the signatures.
I know, and people who put those together, they always play very close to the vest. Oh, they never tell you until they bring in the truckloads of
my hunch is it probably will, but who knows?
They've got teachers all over the state doing it, but you never know until the end. And I sincerely hope it does. I sincerely hope it passes. I think, by the way, having that on the ballot will be favorable to Democrats, because I think it will bring out more Democrats in favor than it will bring out Republicans against. And Bill, right before the show started, we were talking, and I mentioned, because I just looked it up to be sure, that Donald Trump won Arizona by only 4 points over Hillary. Mm-hmm. Now, someplace he won 10, 20, 25. He won by a mere 4 points. And that means, what happens in the elections, you know, the Republicans have things in their favor, but what happens is going to have to do with turnout, and it's going to have to do with who decides to show up. And remember, Trump got about 30% of the Hispanic vote here, too.
Wow.
Now, are Republicans going to get 30% of the Hispanic vote in face of what's going on in terms of the immigration and things of that nature? I just don't know. And by the way, Ducey has said as little as possible about immigration at this point, but I think he's got his wet finger up in the wind, seeing which way it's going to blow, because he would love to pivot to immigration if it was a winning issue and away from education.
Well,
so we'll see.
It's going to be interesting. Oh, this boy. Three-way primary with Steve Farley, state senator, and then you have Dr. Garcia, who is an educator from ASU, and then you have Kelly Fryer.
Right.
So it's a three-way race. And you've got two of the three from Tucson. Right. So I don't know how that will kind of impact the whole thing, but we'll see.
I'm a terrible at predicting horse races. I'm almost always wrong, so I won't say anything about that other than I would say from my standpoint that I would love to see a Democrat sitting in the governor's office. And we'll see. You know, the people in the primary are going to decide, and it's going to tell us something. You know, Garcia, we know, is Hispanic, and if he actually brings a Hispanic wave voting for him, which he didn't do when he ran for superintendent of public instruction, but if he does, that could be a game changer not only for him, but for the entire state in the election.
What's new with state, these grades for schools, David Safir?
Oh, well, if anybody was reading The Star, they saw that Hank Stevenson, who does a terrific job covering education in The Star, had a front page article about the state grades. And these are the grades that were brought out, God, what was it, November or something like that? They're the grades for not this current year, but the grade for the year before, for 16-17. Not for 17-18, but they had to revise them because there were problems with the grading system. And basically, they created a few more A's, and I think they created a few less F's. But it stayed the same, basically. But here's what's going on, and I think this is really important to understand the kind of punishment that's being put on the low-grading schools. If your school gets a D or your school gets an F, you have to send a letter through the mail to every resident in your school's attendance area saying, we have to tell you that this school got a D grade or an F grade. Well, this is kind of a weird comparison to make, but this was actually made by one of the principals saying, this makes me feel like I'm a sex offender, that I have to tell everybody in the neighborhood.
Right.
So it's a public shaming. Mm-hmm. And the shame of this public shaming is that these grades are more dependent on demographics, more dependent on whether you have low-income kids or high-income kids, than they are about the quality of the school or the quality of the teaching staff. And I could bring up more quotes, but I want to bring up one quote on this, Bill.
Okay.
If we want, we could go further.
No, but go ahead.
John Hubenthal used to be the superintendent of public instruction. I disagreed with him almost everywhere, chapter and verse. He was one of the people who was instrumental in putting together the state grades. And he said this on public radio the other day, and I'm going to give you a direct quote, so you got to know this is his words. He says, here we have this letter grading system that comes in and is beating, to put it bluntly, beating the hell out of schools that are serving the most at-risk populations. Now, I not only agree with every word that John Hubenthal said there, which is words you've probably never heard come from my mouth before, but I think he said it better than I could about how these schools are getting beat up by a system that says, you have low-income kids. It doesn't say you have low grades. It says you have low-income kids, and we're going to punish you for it. It's a terrible system, which I think we've got to get rid of these grades. We've got to get rid of the emphasis on tests. They're bad for schools. We've got to improve schools, but this is blaming and shaming. This is an improvement.
790-2040, 790-2040, if you would like to join in the conversation. If there's something you agree or even disagree with David, he would be happy to hear your comments. We'll take our break right here as we push toward 1245 on this Monday afternoon on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be right back. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improved regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. One of our fine sponsors is Green Things. Really exciting things going on at Green Things. They're on 13 acres over on River. And a new home for Zocalo will be Green Things. Zocalo has all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America and some European merchandise as well. They're near the corner of Country Club and Broadway. And you can get over there for their pre-move sale before they move over to Green Things. A lot of reduced items. So check it out, and then Zocalo will soon be over at Green Things. David Safir is here. We're talking about education. David writes in the TucsonWeekly.com, the column called The Range. And David, we were talking about the whole state grades for schools. And I want to talk about something about a report card for our nation's commitment to public schools. Do we have any idea what that commitment is about, or what does it place Arizona? Where does it place Arizona?
Yeah, we do. It's gotten a fair play, and it's got a lot of play in the press and other places. We were just talking about school grades. Well, this is a report card for the nation that not only gave Arizona an F, but it gave it the lowest F in terms of the scores. There were about five or six states that got F on it. And the reason was, it's called the Nation's Report Card on Commitment to Public Schools. And this is a group, the Network for Public Education, who really doesn't like the trend towards privatization. In other words, they don't like vouchers. They don't like an overemphasis on charters. You know, whether they like charters at all is another issue. But they said that in terms of our privatization, we scored the worst in the sense that we have the largest voucher system in the nation, the way it's set up right now, though that's going to be on the ballot to change it. But it also has a terrible accountability system. In other words, with our empowerment scholarship accounts, they don't pay attention to the money. They don't pay attention to where the parents are spending it. So it's not even well administered. And then we also have the tuition tax credit program, which is another form of voucher. And they said it's got one of the highest nation's eligibility ratings, meaning that the more people can get into it than in most states. And it also is terrible in terms of accountability. So they said in terms of those things, Arizona favors privatization over public schools more than any other state. And they also added that there are only four states in the nation that allow for-profit charter schools. Now think about that. A charter school gets money from the state, and if it's run as a for-profit business, like a store or a restaurant, that means really the less money they spend on the students, the more money they get to put in their pocket. Every dollar that's not spent on a textbook goes into their pocket. And so that for-profit system, only four states have that. Arizona is one of them. So you add the vouchers to the for-profit charters, and it put Arizona at the dead last in the state and the lowest F in the country.
We were one of the first states to get into that whole public voucher thing.
We were. The
earliest, I think, into the charter school realm.
Well, the educational savings account or empowerment scholarship accounts, we literally started that. Thank the Goldwater Institute up in Phoenix, because that was their baby, and they've spread it around the country. And I think it's a terrible system. My term for it is that it's vouchers on steroids. It's vouchers with an extra little poison part of it that I really don't like. And in terms of charters, we weren't the first. But at one point, we had more charters per capita, per student, than any other state in the country. I don't know if that's still true, but we certainly are one of the charter capitals and called the Wild West of charters often.
And the vouchers will be decided by the voters, right?
Well, yes. It won't be that the program will go away. We're not talking about – it gets so complicated. You've got to lay it all out. It's not the tuition tax credit program. It's the empowerment scholarship accounts, where they basically give parents a credit card, or a debit card, I should say, to spend on education, so long as it's not in public schools. And the legislature said, let's make it available to every single student in the state. And a group of people, totally volunteer with no money behind them, put together an initiative where people are going to be able to vote whether it should be for every student or back to the limits that were on it before. So it's a very important issue. Again, it's another issue that I think, and you know, I don't know, but I think it's more interesting to people who are against vouchers and people who are for them. And by the way, no state ever, the population has ever voted for vouchers. No state. I mean, only 8% or something like that of our students are in private schools. So the number of people who get these vouchers are, what, 3 or 4% of the student population. 97% of the parents don't get any benefit from it. So it's likely that they're not going to be for it. So we've got between Invest in Ed and the voucher initiative that they're both on the ballot, we've got some very interesting things, which, by the way, are going to get a lot of national news.
They are. There's going to be the education election in Arizona. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been focusing on teachers in the past, and they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars on teachers. But what about the students?
Well, it's interesting. This was in a post I recently put together that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, you know, billions of dollars there, they put $200 million, which for them is a drop in the bucket, to make teachers more effective. And they went into four or five school districts and a couple of charter schools, and they said, let's work out a program to make teachers more effective. Let's, for instance, if a teacher's kids get high scores, let's give them merit pay. In other words, a bonus to their salary. Now, Bill, the idea that any teacher works less hard than the most they could possibly work and would somehow work harder because they would get bonus pay is absurd. All they do is teach the test more. But the other thing is, let's get a stronger evaluation system and let's watch the teachers more. Let's try to get rid of the low-hanging fruit with the teachers. Well, after 6 years, the RAND Corporation just put out a study of this, you know, based on what the Gates Foundation had, and said, you know, nothing changed. We didn't move the needle. We put in $200 million, and similar schools that didn't get the money, their student achievement was pretty much the same, plus or minus. In other words, teacher effectiveness is not where it goes. And this, again, when we say we've got to get better teachers, we've got to get better schools, well, what Bill and Melinda Gates are doing, and thank God it's about time, is they say, you know, maybe we shouldn't look so much at the teachers and trying to improve them. Maybe the teachers are really hardworking, which is true, and effective, which is generally true. Maybe we've got to look at the kids. Maybe we've got to look at how early childhood education affects kids. Maybe we've got to look at how we can boost the family support for the kids. Maybe we've got to do that. Maybe we've got to look at the kids' health and nutrition, prenatal care, things of that nature. In other words, to get these kids ready for school as much as possible when they enter kindergarten. And when they're ready for school, teachers are there to teach them. That's true. No matter where you are, teachers, by and large, are benevolent, hardworking people who work regardless of the amount of money in their paycheck. And the better the students come in prepared, the better chance the teachers have to be effective teachers. So let's look at what's going on with the kids. Let's decrease income inequality, let's get better health care, all kinds of things that I am for, and which, unfortunately, Bill, and I know I am bringing this up at the end, I think we're going in the wrong direction with the Trump administration and getting rid of these things. I think it breaks my heart to see this happening.
Money spent toward, well, there's, if you throw a lot of money at a school district, there's no, is there, are there, how do you know you're getting your money's worth? I think that's a big fundamental question.
Oh, it's very difficult to say because, I dislike the idea of throwing money, or that term, because we don't talk about throwing money at defense or throwing money at things of that nature. We don't talk about throwing money at roads when we repair roads. So giving money, there's not a direct one-on-one correlation. But I'll tell you, let's look at Arizona, which is at the bottom of the amount that's spent. Our schools are crumbling. Our teachers are leaving. The ones who are there are working their tails off, but we don't have enough teachers to fill the classrooms. We have temporary teachers all over the place. Kids are using history books that have George Bush as the most recent president. I mean, these are things that we don't even have to look at statistics. We don't have to look at how it benefits things. These are just a travesty. These are third world conditions in a country that is one of the great countries of the world. We are failing our students in any number of ways, and Arizona is failing them worse than others. Let's put the money in there. Let's bring it up to a reasonable state. Then we can talk about how much more there should be.
It's going to be interesting with the bonus or the raise that are becoming to teachers, whether that will kind of stem the flow of teachers leaving.
We'll see. It's about $3,000 per teacher, so that's about $250 per month or something like that. It's not a huge amount of money, but it doesn't put us near. We're still $6,000 to $10,000 a year away from, say, New Mexico or most of the neighboring states. So, boy, oh boy, oh boy, if you want to teach over in California, you're going to make a lot more money. You want to teach in New Mexico, a little more money. And I consider teachers to be humanitarians and heroes, and the fact they're sticking it out under the conditions in Arizona. I taught in Oregon, where we had better conditions in terms of that, and it was tough enough there. God bless our teachers for how hard they work.
And what subject were you teaching?
I was a high school English teacher mainly. Okay. And then I decided, geez, I'm going to go into photography a little bit because our photography teacher mm-hmm. left. And then I said, well, I'm going to take over the yearbook. And then my last 10 years, I said, I think I'll go back to teaching English again. So I was all over the place, Bill. I like to teach different books and different subjects every 3 or 4 years so I didn't get stale.
There you go. David, we'll look for your work. What do you have up right now at TucsonWeekly.com?
Well, right now I have this the deals about the report card that I talked about mm-hmm. and about Bill Gates and actually something about Betsy DeVos and a bogus company that she and her family invested in. And I'm going to put up something soon about the Walton Family Foundation that invests almost $200 million a year, almost exclusively in charter schools, which means
the Walmart group.
The Walmart family, right. Okay. And to show how much money is being pumped into the privatization type system. So that'll be my next one.
Thank you, David. Mm-hmm. On behalf of David and, of course, Ray Allen, we're great to see you back, Ray, on the other side of the glass. Coming up this afternoon, Mic Check with Mike Shaw. Ray will help Mike out, and then tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson 6 to 9. Me, Bill Buckmaster, with you at 12:04. All of us hope you have a great afternoon and evening.